Hey everybody, it is Big Heart Strong Jake Adams, and we're back. Yeah, it's been a while since an episode has been up. A lot of stuff going on in my personal life, but we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about wrestling, and we're going to have on this episode tonight, it's his first podcast ever. We're going to be talking to RJ Adams from Red Shoes Media, a guy who's he's at shows everywhere. Always taking some of the best pictures that really capture moments, and I think he does a great job with his photography. So I'm pretty stoked that I get the chance to sit down and talk to him about all that, and you know, see where his love of wrestling came from and what it's like to be a photographer at this show. Is always running around like crazy and finding ways to always capture these great shots. So you know the deal. In a couple seconds, we'll be back with RJ Adams. All right, everybody, we are back, and we are with RJ Adams of Red Shoes Media. Again, thank you so much for taking some time out of your life to come and, you know, talk wrestling with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me. This actually feels pretty awesome. Let's hit the ground running.
All right, man, so we'll start out. I'm sure you've been asked a million times in your life, like, how you got into wrestling or, you know, when you started watching and stuff. I feel like that's the routine question. So I just want to know if you remember if there was an exact, like, moment or an angle or a match that hooked you to wrestling.
I mean, well, I don't remember like one particular thing that had me be like, oh my god, I have to watch this, because for me it was just something I did with my dad. I started watching wrestling when I was 5 because he used to watch wrestling, and he always used to be excited and used to shout at the wrestlers from the couch. Oh, my father gets super animated. I remember one time I went with him to like a holiday show in the Barclays. That was a pretty fun experience. But to keep on the question, I think it was around WrestleMania 10, if I had to say one particular thing. I think that was the first one. That was the first one I had watched live. And it was Bret Hart, my favorite wrestler of all time, and was my favorite wrestler then. Versus Owen Hart. It's one of the best matches I've ever seen. It's definitely the best opener for a Mania match, still, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, hands down.
And then, like, even the ending of that pay-per-view, to me, my personal opinion, it's one of the best all-time endings of WrestleMania ever. I think the only one that tops it is Seth Rollins stealing the championship. It's so beautiful. It's like, so Bret Hart wins the championship from Yokozuna, which is, I'll say straight up, that was a super hokey finish. That dude just falls off the ring and just, oh, let me spin him real quick. But like, the thing I liked about it, everybody, all the boys come out and congratulate Bret on slaying Yokozuna and getting the championship back, and then Owen Hart just stands in the middle of the aisle, pissed off to high heaven, that he just beat his brother. He beat him clean in the middle of the ring a few hours ago, and he could have been champion. Oh, love that ending. I love that ending. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, it was so perfect. And, you know, it was at a time when I felt like they could tell the stories better. You know what I mean?
Exactly. That was just that's the old days of Pat and Vince booking by the pool. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and Pritchard having to listen to it all.
It's like, that was sort of his thing.
But you're right, that was, it's such a fun WrestleMania in retrospect.
I was like, yeah, you have like, well, what we thought at the time was the first ever ladder match, which is still amazing watching this day. It still holds up amazingly well, which is to give credit to both of those gentlemen, you know, Razor and Shawn. And then, like, you have a whole bunch of weirdness, like there's that match with there's that match of Crush and the Macho Man, and
oh,
he just hangs Crush up somewhere, and then dives into the like. What is that? I don't even remember what that match was about and why they had it.
I'm trying to remember why the whole angle behind it, but if I remember correctly, Macho Man was a big fan of Crush's. Like, they got along outside the ring, and this was his way of trying to, you know, build him up, and it just, it didn't work.
Yeah, it didn't work because I don't remember that to this day.
I remember him being hung up in like gym equipment, but that's the only thing I remember of it. I can't tell you anything about that feud.
I don't know if it was like gym equipment or like special MSG equipment that they needed to hoist things. I don't even know. I was like, but definitely WrestleMania 10 was a very interesting WrestleMania. I don't know if I had watched WrestleMania 9 live if I would have actually remained a fan.
Yeah, I remember that one live. And as a kid, for some reason, that Mania held up so well in my head. Like, oh, that was one of the better ones. And then, you know, you watch the VHS years later when you know more, and you're like,
You know why you was a kid that you thought it was better?
Because I was a kid.
Also that, and because it had elephants.
It did, and when, I guess it's just, this is one of the memories that will always stick with me, is Bobby Heenan coming out on the camel backwards. Was just Bobby perfect Heenan. Bobby Heenan. you mentioned Brett as one of your favorites, or your absolute favorite. Who else were some of the early favorites of yours? And were you mostly a WWF guy, or did you check out WCW too?
Well, I live to this day in, you know, in Brooklyn, New York. And so, way back in the 90s, it was very, very hard if you didn't have cable to watch WCW.
Yeah.
I understand, like, later on, like, I might have seen, like, they might have played WCW, like, 6 a.m. on a Saturday on, like, Channel 11, which most kids are not up that late. No, excuse me, that early. So, I was definitely a WWF guy. Like, that's the wrestling I grew up on. It was Superstars on Saturday. Wrestling Challenges on Sunday, both at 12 on Channel 5. Never forget that. So, my first favorite says, you mentioned Bret Hart. I mean, still is. I met the man twice. Always a class act all the way. Barry Horowitz, actually. I used to always enjoy Barry Horowitz getting beaten up. And he had that little run for a little bit, too.
Oh, that was awesome as a kid.
That was super cool. That was, like, super inspirational at the time, too. And also, like, I was a fan of Ahmed Johnson, too.
Oh, I loved Ahmed when I was a kid. I thought that dude was unbeatable. And then you hear stories later.
I was like, yeah, I thought he was the fucking man back in the day when I was growing up. It's this big, jet black dude damn near, and he was just brolic as all hell. And then come to find out, he might have been a bit of an asshole.
Yeah, and like when he was doing the Tiger Driver on the roof of that car that one time, I was like, this is the coolest shit ever. Why isn't this man champion?
That's the coolest shit. That is the coolest shit. But then, like, you find out that Ron Simmons had to put a beating to his ass.
Yeah. And the later Big T run in WCW, which was a bit lackluster.
Well, a lot of things in WCW in that era have been lackluster, to be fair.
It was an interesting time.
Oh, it was. It was a very interesting time. I remember when Haku... Oh, matter of fact, Alundra Blaze. Alundra Blaze, for me, to this day, is still one of my all-time favorite women's wrestlers.
Fair. I totally get that.
It's like, yeah, I always loved what she did, but she always fought, like, I don't think she fought more than five different women in the entire time she was in the WWF.
You're right. I can only think of a few. Bull Nakano is always the first one that comes to mind. I think.
Birth of Faye.
Yep, that was the second one I was about to mention. Then after that, I can't even think of any.
I was like, they might have imported some women from time to time, but I can't really remember who they are, to be honest.
Hey, but she was over, man. That's all that matters.
She was super over. Like, I don't understand, like, why they just held in so little regard.
No clue.
Weirdest thing to me.
I remember going to the fan fest before WrestleMania 11, which for some reason my mom and dad took me to the fan fest. Did not get tickets to WrestleMania, but like, oh, we'll go to this. Because that makes sense. And
we get to see the event surrounding WrestleMania. Yeah. The thing that you really want to go to the most of your life. Well, we get to meet some of the superstars, though.
Yeah, that part was really cool. And I remember Alundra having her own, like, set up with, like, a bike and everything. And there was just people all around it, like, the whole time. And then, you know, in retrospect, it's like, they really could have done a lot more. But they did.
They They absolutely could have. I mean, I think it was just a matter of just getting an actual division instead of just putting a woman, giving a woman a belt to just, let's see what we could find around Japan and Asia and Mexico.
Right.
That just seems like a haphazard way to even run a division. But, you know.
And, I mean, if you had the chance at that point in the mid-90s to maybe create a working agreement with All Japan Women's and you chose not to, that's a bad decision.
I mean, but, like, they've done stuff like that before in the 90s. I mean, sometimes the crowd was into it. Sometimes they were, like, ice cold with it. It was very, like, hot and cold with those crowds back in those days.
Yeah.
If it wasn't American, they didn't really, at least in WWF at the time, they wasn't seeming into it.
Yeah, I feel like WCW did a better job at times of hyping when the New Japan guys came over.
Oh, absolutely. A much, much better job. Like, I mean, if you didn't know who they were, you got a feel of who they were just by, based on the way they were selling. Like, the Great Mood is like, they was pushing videos and videos from all of his past tours. WCW was just, oh my, he seems important.
Yeah.
And then he sped out and missed. It's like, holy shit!
Or
when you're a kid, it's just like, what was that?
Yeah, I still to this day remember being at my house as a little kid, 4 years old, and we got the Super Brawl 2 pay-per-view, and out comes Liger. And from that moment on, I'm like, I don't know who this guy is, but I love him. And man, that has not changed.
Man, I am proud. I am very proud to say that I got to see Jushin Thunder Liger in his only WWE appearance at the Barclays.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, my God. That is just, I'll never forget that. That was a great match, too, that you had with Tyler Breeze.
It was. And that's another person I felt like they dropped the ball with on Tyler Breeze. So much. I mean,
that's a completely different podcast right
it
now.
Is.
That's a 3-hour podcast.
You're not wrong.
That's a 3-hour podcast right there.
All right. Let's go. But as we were kind of mentioning earlier, I feel like in today's like modern climate, sometimes it's harder to tell the stories. It's kind of harder to keep fans engaged. I know a lot of people that I grew up with, once they got to a certain age, the allure wasn't there to them anymore. What is it about wrestling that has kept you a fan for this long?
I mean, well, I did have a bit of a brief lapse, like, you know, right after college, like when I first like started attending classes. And then only fairly recently when the network originally came out. That was something I always said, if they create some sort of service that streams with like access to all the old matches, I am in there no matter what. And then once I started watching, catching up with the newer stuff, I was like, this seems pretty cool. And I became a fan all over again. But the thing about wrestling that keeps fans even coming back to it is that it always evolves. Wrestling from the 50s is not like it is in the 70s, it's not like it is from the 90s, and damn sure not like it is now.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, so if you like the old school people, you know, just the grappling and moves and like the gotch style stuff, I mean, all those things exist. Like, you could watch those things. If you're an amateur wrestling fan, that's still pretty, I would say still pretty thriving.
Yeah.
You know? And then, like, you have, you know, your people in Japan. There's new burgeoning, wrestling countries. I'm trying to remember at least one of them. Like, Singapore, I believe, is one of them. I believe that there was, like, a show in a Dutch show that somebody was commenting about. I'm trying to remember the name, but it's sort of escaping me right now. But there is really and truly something for everybody, especially now in the age of the WWE Network and the Peacock and NJPW World and all the various other streaming platforms. You know?
I mean, that's like when I was on IWTV one of the first times, and I'm scrolling through stuff, and they have some promotion from Denmark on there. I'm like, wow, look at pro wrestling.
Like, I am actually scared to really dive in fully to my IWTV account because I think I'd find some crazy German fed, and, like, I'd want to talk to people about it. Nobody knows what the hell I'm talking about.
That's mostly been me my entire life when it comes to wrestling, so I understand that.
Same here. You know, just whenever I have wrestling fans, I cherish them as much as I possibly can.
Now, what made you get into photography?
I mean, well, that's a bit of an interesting question. So, the thing that really got me interested in photography, I mean, I've always been interested in the image. For me, like, I mean, one of the first classes I had in high school was mass media, and that taught me, like, the breakdown of, you know, propaganda and things that are pleasing to the eye and what they mean for advertising and all that stuff. That sort of intrigued me. And then the next class was a video production class, and then I started messing around with that. It's like, this is really cool. You mean I can make a reality any sort of way I want to? And I just tell people what to do? And that's just... that still actually gets me very tingly just thinking about that. But moving on a little bit, I actually had my sister. She had a Nikon SLR, film SLR at the time. This was like back in the early 2000s, like 2004, 2005. And I asked to borrow it, which that very camera I still have in my closet. I never gave it back. And, yeah, I started shooting for my school's yearbook in high school when I was a senior. It's a nerdy cliche. I couldn't possibly make up anything more ridiculous than that. But, yeah, that's how it pretty much happened. And then I got hooked shooting things and people. I bought my first digital DSLR, the Nikon D80, sometime, like, maybe a year or two after. And that's when I really started to take pictures of my friends and started sharpening up my... I'm really a self-taught photographer. The only place I really had sought actual instruction from was a website called KenRockwell.com. A lot of photographers have a very love-hate relationship with the man, but, I mean, for me, he just allowed me to... Well, gave me the platform. Not necessarily the platform, but just the means on how to create an image. You know, just all the standard level stuff. And then from there, I just started shooting more and more and more. And leading me up to this point where I'm possibly world famous. I've got some tweets from Japan, but it's been a very long road. That was like at least a couple of years I was like a club photographer, or like I was a photographer for hire. So any sweet 16s or like any sort of like, you know, weddings, any like sort of parties you needed to take a picture of, I was your man. And I excel at that very well. And I think a lot of that experience, especially for the way you have to think on your feet, that really set me up well to shoot wrestling.
Yeah, and nothing's worse than photographing a wedding. I don't think there's anything.
Oh my God, it's one of the most nerve-wracking things, because you're trying to create your name, and you also want to create, you know, special, you know, just beautiful photographs for this lovely married couple that might get divorced in 2 years or so.
I mean, you're not wrong, but one of the last weddings I went to, I was talking to one of the photographers, and he was like, the people that works with him refuses to do weddings, just won't do it, because one, they don't want the pressure.
Yeah.
And two, they don't like dealing with, because there's usually one family member who's throwing a fit about the dumbest shit ever, and they just don't want that on their plate. But like, seven-year-old birthday parties, they're in, which I don't get.
Oh, that's children are the easiest ever, unless they're absolute monsters. But like, I haven't done a wedding where I've had to encounter a bridezilla. I think that would just pretty much kill any sort of thing I would ever want to do with a wedding. But I heard about this couple that pretty much like as okay. Let me start from the beginning again. So there's a couple that had a wedding. And one of their friends, as a gift to them, wanted to provide their photography services to the wedding. But then, like, the man just simply, I just want a meal. Like, can I get a sit-down meal? And then they refused to feed him. And just based upon that, you know what I'm going to do for you? I'm going to delete all these pictures.
Oh, no.
Fuck you. Goodbye. Which is just like, ooh. I've kind of thought about doing that, but then if I take really good pictures, I kind of want them archived.
I get that.
But like, I definitely understand. I definitely understand where he's coming from. But I've never attended a wedding where that's been even a discussion on the table. It's like, of course we'll feed you. That's, they always mention that. They go out of their way to mention that, like, it's like it's some sort of pandemic out there that photographers don't get fed, which apparently it is, now I'm finding out.
Wow. I was unaware of that.
I was as well up until recently, but of course I'm not a wedding photographer by trade. So.
Yeah, and speaking of your trade, when did you first get the idea of taking your photography and then mixing it with your love of wrestling?
Oh, man, that's a pretty interesting question as well. For me, I think the first show that I shot was probably the very first Violence and Suffering show that they ever had with the late Frank Lucas was attending, which is like my... Holy shit! Like I was kind of marking out just being around there, but the way that happened was a former friend of mine. He just hit me up because he used to see me taking pictures at the various pay-per-view parties in New York City that I would do from time to time, and he just thought I'd be a natural fit to shoot ringside. And I was like, you know what? And he was paying, which is
even better.
which is another thing that I quickly found out that is not normal in the indies. Photography. But yeah, I accepted the assignment, nervous as hell. I brought all the wrong lenses. So I had brought a 50mm prime, which is, you can't really use that to shoot ringside because if you shoot at that field of view, you should actually be in the crowd for your most ideal shots. I found this out the hard way, of course. But I still got pretty good shots. I believe one of the first matches I shot was Leo Rush versus John Silver.
Oh, wow.
Which is, yeah, man. And I saw that Leo Rush is amazing as all hell. Possibly the fastest wrestler I have ever seen perform live.
Yeah, I can agree with that. The only one I think that might have been quicker that I saw was... one of those early Dragon Gate USA shows, I think I saw Yoshino, who was insanely fast at that point.
I was like, yeah, fucking Pac is also, I've seen him wrestle a few times. He's ridiculously fast. But when I originally had started shooting, you know, wrestling, I had called myself Roger Adams Photography because that's my birth name. But then, like, I thought that just seems kind of boring, you know? I mean, Roger Adams, that could be anybody. So, you know, I have a love for sneakers, a love for red sneakers. I was also partially inspired by the Red Shoes ref. I also want to make sure I say his name properly. Hiroyuki Uno.
I love Red Shoes Uno, my favorite ref.
Like, he's the most gangster ref of all of them worldwide.
Oh, yeah. I just love his facial reactions. I love his reactions in general to stuff. Like, I love it when somebody's brawling on the outside, does something crazy on the outside, rolls him in, the heel goes for the cover, and he's like, no, I'm not counting that shit. Get the fuck out of here.
The man is great at what he does. And so, I mean, well, based upon those two things, I decided, you know, I just said to myself, I was thinking about, like, new names for a company, like Red Shoes Media. I really like the way it sounded, like Red Shoes Media. That just sounds kind of evocative. And so I decided, I mean, that was a bit of a break because I just wasn't working for a good period of time, and then I had other jobs. So I decided to hop back, like, full time, or at least as much of my time as I could give to Red Shoes Media. I was hungry and inspired. And so, as we all know, the pandemic happened. And, like, shortly before that, though, that was the first the second ICW show I attended. But this is the first, like, major deathmatch show that I went to. This was No Holds Barred Volume 1 in White Eagle Hole, New Jersey. A great show. I got some amazing shots. I have this amazing, one of my all-time favorite pictures that I've ever shot that I have signed by Nick Gage. It's awesome. Nick Gage versus Tessa Blanchard. He's fish hooking her. It's like an extreme close up of it too. Oh my god! It's one of my all time favorite things I've ever shot for various reasons, which I'll leave up to the imagination for the time being.
And
but oh, sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead, man. You're on a roll.
And yeah, and I just kept on going to shows. I met with two amazing people, Scotty Kolich, and Lawrence Lakshin. I met Scotty at the second ICW show they had in Atlantic City, and he was drunk off his ass, and I was looking to get drunk off my ass, and he just led me to the bar. We had a nice discussion about wrestling and who was there, and I didn't really know like the scene at the time, but I knew that there were just, you know, there's a lot of good people. You know, I heard about a lot of people, heard about Schlack, heard about Nick Gage, and I just wanted to see these and see these people and shoot them close up. And yeah, that's when Akira debuted. And
yep,
yeah, and me and Akira, man, me and Akira, pretty much we came up like around the same time. Like that's when he showed up at ICW. That's when he really goddamn blew up.
I had Akira on this podcast the week before that show.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, well, do you remember what that interview was like? I'm actually very curious.
Yeah, it was one of those things where he was just super hopeful about what could happen.
Yeah,
and then look at
optimist.
It. I love Akira. He's one of my better friends I've met through wrestling. When I ran my first indie show over the summer, he was more than willing to come and help out and just be a part of it and be supportive. He's one of the nicest guys in this business I've ever met, and is totally willing to help you achieve your dreams as much as he wants to achieve his own. I can't say enough great things about the dude.
Oh, I highly agree. He especially is very helpful to new photographers. He's like, he'll put you over, he'll repost your pictures. That is just so cool that he just goes out of his way to do that, you know?
Yeah, I agree, man. I like I said, I can't say enough awesome stuff about Akira. He's a dude I always love talking to and seeing what's up and running into him at shows.
I was like, yeah, and even like the Red Shoes media shirt that I have of him, like he just like, I asked him for permission to use the image, and I was expecting to slide him some money. He's like, you know what, you know, for everything, all the pictures you shot of me, just, you know, go ahead, do it. Which I can't thank him enough for that.
Yeah, and it's just a real class act thing to do, to just be that willing.
Oh, of course. And of course you can buy my shirts at deathmatchworldwide.com. I have to, because when you buy those shirts, you'll have something cool that you can wear, and you'll also be providing me money, which is very, very helpful.
Yeah.
That's extremely helpful, actually.
It will get you to more shows to take more pictures.
Exactly.
Now, can you tell me or kind of explain to the people listening the difficulties that come from photographing wrestling? Because from a few people I've talked to have done it, it is much different than most other photography settings.
I mean, that is 100% true. I can definitely tell you I am an extremely aggressive photographer than my peers. I mean, for me, if I have the full run of ringside, I will run around ringside as much as possible to get the shots that I need. But of course, if you're going to have 3, 4, 5 photographers around ringside, you know, the best thing to do just for everybody is to find a corner and stick to it. But the thing is about professional wrestling, you have to keep your head on the swivel, man. Like, you can't just be, I was like, oh, let me take a look at these pictures. Then you get hit with a steel chair and get your limbs smashed up and possibly your body all bent out of shape. And you really have to pay attention, you know, as even if you're just going to be just in one corner of the ringside, even if you're going to be someone like me that runs up and down like a maniac shooting every sort of, like, possible shot that you can. You have to be very mindful of that. I've seen my fellow photographers shoot death matches with flip-flops on, and I every time I see that, it's just like, why would you do that? Like, why would you do that? There's ring crew. There's certain members of ring crew that I've encountered in a lot of places that'll do ring crew for Death Matters in flip flops and socks,
yes.
Which is the craziest thing in the world to me. I believe in proper protection. Now, maybe I've been in retail too long. Maybe I've seen a few safety seminars too many. But I like to have all my the feeling in my toes, for example.
And you know, just from being, you know, in the front couple rows of deathmatch shows, and, you know, just it doesn't take much for that random piece of glass to just go flying, and next thing you know, you feel an itch on your leg, you're not sure what it is, and you're like, oh, so I'm bleeding.
I was like, yeah, then Leo Rush wants to run around the ring. If you're just sitting down on your phone, and then if the dude's about to crash, like, right next to you, he's like, holy shit, what? It's like, you know, you gotta be prepared for that.
Yeah.
Or it could just be like one of those real stubborn assholes. It's like, well, I paid for my seat. I'm going to sit right here. And, all right. Well, it's. Well, a lot of these companies don't have money for medical bills, so it's, that's really your call.
Unless you want to be eaten up by the person being thrown.
Eaten up by the person being thrown, you could get. You know, some barbed wire stabs, some glass spray, some vapor inhalation, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know. And I was like, and you pay top dollar to be there, and fuck, I'm shooting ringside for free a lot of occasions. So, I mean, who's really getting who on that one?
And, you know, the first time I ever really noticed you was last summer. At the ICW show, was in the field, and just seeing you just running absolutely everywhere.
And that's when I was just like a dude with a camera. I do have to say this. I always will say this whenever I can. Chris Grasso and Earl Gardner, I appreciate them. I appreciate all the advice they've given me, just as like some... As like, you know, photographer dads, you know, I appreciate the fact that I felt like they could have possibly had me shut down at any point. They could have just said something to somebody and then, like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But they didn't. But they didn't. They were actually very encouraging to me. But I always like to go out of my way to say that, especially because, technically speaking, the way I came up was... pretty obnoxious, finding out afterwards. But the best way to do it, the best way to actually get in is just develop your body of work, get your shots, get some good shots. Try not to steal shots from ringside like I like to do. But here's the thing about me and Red Shoes Media. If I have a camera and if I'm going to be at the show, I'm going to get my shots. I mean, that's just the way I operate.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's that's just I'm Brooklyn born and raised, you know, a hustler by trade, I suppose you'd say.
And you know, you're building a brand. You're out here, you know, putting yourself in these situations where it's, you know, building the name and the prestige. So you have to do what you have to do to make sure that you can do that.
Exactly. And like, this is one of the things I had to understand. I actually had to upgrade certain aspects of my personality to actually be properly able to do this, because the thing is about professional photographers and hobbyist photographers is that professionals have to wake up and do it every day. This is their job. You have deadlines that you have to hit, and you have to hit these deadlines. You can't just be like, I just don't feel like working today. I don't feel inspired, guys. You know, it's like, you know what, though, sometimes I'll see somebody's work and it's just like, God damn it, let me get out of bed and get back to work. It's just because like sometimes it's other people's work that inspires you. To just like, can I do that, or can I like provide a different perspective? But yeah, I mean, it is what it is sometimes.
Yeah, which I get. But, I mean, I've always been in awe of how you just are nonstop. Because, I mean, I probably could do that for, like, 36 seconds. And I'd be like, you know what? I'm blown out. I'm just going to stay over here. But you are everywhere.
Red shoes is everywhere. But, like, yeah, I mean, that the way I'm used to working like that is because, again, for my first shows, I was the only photographer present. So I like to create the idea of coverage. So I like it to look like I was, like it was shot by multiple people, except it's just one me. It's just Red Shoes that did all of this.
Which always makes it look more impressive for those who maybe just kind of don't understand or have never seen you at a show of how much you are moving around the crowd.
It's insane. And what's interesting, I was just at, I think it was a GCW Fight Club, and I had met a Sikthik Mondo. And he actually asked me if I had wrestled, which I, what? Well, why are you asking me that? Like, I was floored by the idea. But, like, then again, like, I thinking about it, like, you kind of, like, the way I work, you kind of have to be a little bit, you know, swift.
Yeah.
But you kind of have to be swift because, I mean, there's, even as fast as I am, there's still shit that I miss. And then, like, sometimes, I don't know if you'll hear it, especially in the IWTV broadcast, where you'll hear someone say, fuck, in a very loud voice, and that was probably me just missing a shot for some reason.
I'm not going to keep an eye out for that at every show.
Like, yeah, I mean, again, like, the way I shoot is it's by coverage, it's by different, you know, angles. I always love shooting the men and women that come through the ropes, just, I always like to provide them with lots of different options. You know, that's sort of my job. Like, it's not as much as I would like to say, oh, people come here to see Red Shoes work, but that's ridiculous. People, wrestlers want to see their matches archived in the absolute best ways. And if he could add some art to it, that's beautiful. That's great. People, fans just want to see pictures of their favorites. Sometimes they want to get them signed. The companies themselves, they want to promote themselves, like, wow, it's like, this is what we do here. And so it's like, as long as you understand what your position is, I don't think you'll ever fail.
Agreed, but at the same time, it does have to kind of have that cool feeling of knowing that, I mean, there's people at every show that, if you go to these shows frequently enough, you recognize other people. You know, whether it's Mittens always being around front row, or in most cases, I do look for you. So it does have to be crazy, though, for people to kind of be noticing you and you making these connections with other people in the crowd.
Yeah, that's something I still haven't quite wrapped my head around. And there's a lot of other photographers that picked up cameras and started shooting wrestling matches ringside because of me. And wow, I still can't get over that. You know, it was just the whole, for me, it was the whole pandemic. I just didn't feel like sitting around my, you know, home and just doing nothing, especially when life is happening out there. But the first time I actually went to Florida was because I wanted to shoot an ICW show in the smack in the middle of winter. And when I went there, there was a gentleman that I had met from Texas. He went out of his way to introduce himself to me and said, I'm from Texas. I love your stuff, bro. Stuff like that warms my heart. Sometimes I might come across a little bit, you know, awkward and a little bit, you know, to myself. But, you know, please, I do invite you to come out. You know, if you want to give me a good word, please go ahead and do so. I do appreciate it. And it's really strange to me. I still feel like a mark in, like, a lot of different ways.
Right.
But, like, you know, I feel very good about that, you know, people want to just, you know, want to say hi to me and getting, I still have to, like, work on myself and, like, you're like, wow, so I'm actually, people, like, actually recognize me as a photographer, and people like me as that. And, you know, as an artist, we pretty much hate our own work, intensely. If you know anything about artists, like,
yes.
They pretty much like, I was like, well, I'm glad you think it's good, but this is fucked up, this is fucked up, this is underexposed, and it's, you know, it's always good to hear an outside perspective on these things.
And it probably, you know, makes it feel a little more worthwhile to know what it can mean to other people.
Exactly. Exactly. And it makes me feel good when other people, you know, the wrestlers especially, they share my work. Promotions, they share my work. Fans want to buy prints from me. I've shipped a number of prints across the country to people. I mean, one of my favorite pictures I've ever shot was Atticus Kogar versus Shane Mercer, No Peace Underground. I actually remember the show name, and I'm very bad about these things. Memento Mori. Memento Mori, that was the show. You can watch that on IWTV On Demand. And it's the picture of Atticus breaking the glass that Shane Mercer is holding. And I got it right as it shattered. So it's still mostly intact, but it's clearly broken.
Oh, that's awesome.
And that was like one of the shots that really like started to get me traction. That was all the photographers just hit up that particular picture on my Instagram just to comment like, wow, that's amazing. And that's one of the few pictures I actually printed out that's hanging up on my wall. I'm actually looking at it right now.
that's definitely something to really be proud of. That one's awesome.
It's like, yeah, like I really, really like that shot. Like, I could have someone come over and just, you know, be like, no, well, what do you do? I point to that. It's like, that's what I do. You know?
I love recently one of the ones you took when you have Suzuki hitting the Gotch style pile driver on Joey, and you have him perfectly, you know, in the midair of just him coming down. That one, I love that one.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you. And that was one of the shows I didn't even really have ringside access for. It's I like to say I'm a bit of a hustler. I was actually even warned specifically not to run around ringside, but that's one thing. But I'll get my shots. With respect to GCW, you know, I love what they do. They're really hitting like this in between milestone of like the biggest indie that's like out,
yeah,
and like possibly could compete with like a lot of the major companies. Even like they have several brands now.
Yeah, which I think is crazy to think that they almost have their own developmental as an indie, which is insane.
Which is, you have to understand how batshit insane that is.
Yeah.
And I was like, I mean, you have to give respect or respects due to, you know, Mr. Lauderdale for that. That's, I mean, shit.
And I kind of love that we're in this era of, you know, the forbidden door being opened and, you know, independent contractors being legitimate independent contractors and being able to do their thing on TV and then come work GCW shows at the same time.
It's like, this is the wrestling world that I have always dreamed of.
Yeah. Where
you can see somebody on TV. You can see a Jon Moxley on AEW every Wednesday and every Friday night. And you can possibly go see him the next time he comes through to your local Lindy, if they can afford him. But, you know, that's neither here nor there.
And just, you know, I love how it only felt like a couple years ago when, you know, Matt Cardona was in the E and not really being used and being an afterthought. And now he's just one of these dudes that I love to swear at on the TV screen.
It's like, yeah, like a lot of these guys just needed an opportunity to take a ball and run with it. And wherever they came from, they didn't have that option for whatever reason. I'm not here to speculate about that. But they're outside of those confines, and they're establishing themselves the way they should have.
Yeah, I agree with you, man.
Yeah, and that's absolutely fucking amazing to see. You know, bet on yourself. I mean, that's essentially what Red Shoes Media is about. I mean, that's also one of the reasons why I made such intense focus on trying to build this brand, because I had a pretty good job with a pretty huge multinational, how would I describe this? A huge multinational tech company, let's say.
Okay.
And I had gotten fired over some BS, and you know what? It's just like that movie Up in the Air. George Clooney's telling you, you know, he's video chatting with you, you know, tells you you're fired, but no, this is not a bad thing. This is the beginning of the rest of your life. And it happened to be a lot of people in the pandemic turned a negative into positive, and that's what I'm still trying to maintain and do. And being that I've gotten so much recognition so quickly from so many people, it's been very overwhelming.
I can imagine.
I really do have to say that. Like, yeah, this has really happened so fast. I mean, I personally don't know of any photographers in the indies that even have, you know, as much of a buzz that I've gotten as quickly as I can. I really, really don't want to sound egotistical when I say that, but, like, I think I've just came out of nowhere. And I just started doing good work, and I felt like the wrestlers recognized that even before the fans did.
I mean, I'm just trying to think of how many wrestling photographers I just know offhand, like, that I know and pay attention to. And obviously it's Chris, Earl, you, Dave in the New England area, and Jess in the Northeast area.
Jess, by the way, is going to be shooting AEW show, so motherfucking congratulations to her.
I know, that's so awesome. I'm glad she's getting the chance to do it. She's gotten a rough deal lately with a lot of her personal shit, so for her to get that opportunity, so fucking happy for her.
That, I can't wait to see her pictures when they come out. I really can't. And then you have the other Jess that does fantastic work. I've worked alongside her at a bunch of ICW shows. Her portraits are to die for. I mean, I can't hate on those. She shot a couple pictures of me that I've used as profile pictures. So I can't even talk shit. She's good. She's good. Nick Karp, an ace photographer. Mouse.
Oh, how did I forget Mouse?
How did you forget Mouse?
I don't know. I love Mouse's stuff. How did I forget?
I was like, Mouse, second Gunny. Second Gunny is also one of the best people working out here in these streets, in my personal opinion. I love seeing his pictures. Black and white stuff is just, ooh, it's nice and stark. Nice and stark, just the way I like it. Who else can I give a shout out to? There's the homies at Hardway Photo. He shoots a lot of Impact Wrestling.
Oh, nice.
Which, I mean, he's very good. Very, very good. I worked alongside him WrestleMania weekend, the showcase of the independents. Very kind man, ace photographer, wonderful human being. Can't say enough good things about him. Let's see. Sophia Vasquez, also another great. Like, there are so many good photographers on the indies. It's fucking insane. Like, I don't think there's been a better time to be an indie wrestler to be photographed, because you just have people up the wazoo and the yin yang that just are super good with how they shoot and provide you with a different sort of aspect.
And I guess it's a good thing there's a million indie wrestlers to go along with all these photographers.
A million indie wrestlers, a million indies and shindies just need to have high-quality pictures.
That's right.
You know, I've worked alongside all of them. Oh, I can't forget JL Photography. They're good. I've worked alongside them as well. I don't know if they're husband Mike, too. I was like, but I know if they're a team, and they are very good at what they do. I've worked alongside them a bunch. But, yeah, if I have forgotten you, if I have worked alongside you, it's just because I'm a little bit tipsy right now.
Yeah, and it's getting late, you know?
Yeah, it is getting fairly late. It is getting fairly late. But, just keep the questions coming, man. I am having a blast.
Good. I'm glad you are. That's important to me. I hate to just kind of be in those situations where it's like, man, I bet they're having a fucking terrible time right now, and I feel like shit.
I was thinking about giving, like, those one-word Robert De Niro answers. I was like, but, like, I that wouldn't have been fun for anybody.
No, it would not. Do you keep track of the number of shows you photographed, or do you just kind of, like, know the promotions that you've done?
To me, I'm just, like, Edna Mode. It's just like, well, I'm all about now, darling. but I really don't keep track of them per se. I mean, I have I use Lightroom to pretty much do any sort of picture editing for anything that I shoot. So there is like a running log in in Adobe Lightroom of all the shows that I've shot. I honestly don't really keep track of them. I just, that's the event. Okay, I'll shoot it, I'll edit it, and what's the next thing? But like a lot of times, like I've been trying to force myself to look back because like fuck, like this has been a journey for me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a lot of this has happened so fast, and I just have to force myself to look back. It's like, wow, I really shot these things. Like, and I have to slow down because like some, you do have to look back and you do have to think about the future and where, you know, you do want to take things.
Oh, sorry. I'm scrolling to the next one. What have been some of your favorite moments that you photographed? But I know you've mentioned a few with Gage and Tessa, you know, Kogar and Shane Mercer. Are there any like other ones that like really stand out to you?
Oh man, there's been so much things that I've shot over the last year. I shot Mang versus Schlack. Like never in a million years I thought I would shoot an actual Mang match. I shot New Jack's last match he had in the ring.
Oh, that is insane when you think about
which is like, to me, like that I can't put that into words. Like I really can't put that into words. Like the fact that I shot that. And the man passed away, like, what was it, like a couple of weeks later?
Yeah, I was one of those ones where you hear it and you go, no. And then you just keep seeing it, you're like, damn, I guess so.
I was like, yeah, I mean, yeah, that definitely was some really good stuff. One of the best things I've ever shot, I think, it was this Casey Catall photo of her bloody face. It was just like right after a match she had, like the tag team match, like Mittens, Danny, and of course her husband. And like, I got this beautiful shot of her looking furiously into the lens. And like, it's like one of those things I was going through editing. It's like, oh, that's it. That's the motherfucker. And then like, I made some slight tweaks to it, and it for like a while, it was one of my all-time most liked pictures on my Instagram. But that number has been constantly changing over the last few months, and it's like the growth has been crazy. Whenever I look at my insights on my IG, it's always like, well, you know, it's been increased by several 100%.
That's insane.
Like what? Like it always reads like that. It's like this many people is like trying to watch what I'm doing. Fucking nuts. This is all fucking nuts to me. It really is. In terms of other moments, though, jeez. One of the most favorite things I've shot, one of the ICW shows was Schlack, and Alex Ocean. Schlack throws Alex Ocean off, like, this flaming, like, throws him onto, like, a flaming table and, like, a tube of bundles. I like that shot so much that I had to print it on a shirt, and I wore it for like around the Mania weekend.
That's awesome.
It's like, yeah. And shit. Matter of fact, oh, another moment I can think of, not necessarily related to photography around the ringside per se, but this is like after ICW show. One of the representatives from No Peace Underground, based on the picture I shot of Atticus, they came up to me, shook my hand, and was like, they appreciated like the shot that I got, and you know, we like what you do. And I was like, that was like another like, wow.
Whoa,
like,
that is awesome.
That's always like, well, people are watching what the fuck I'm doing. that's the constant thing. You know, I've said that like maybe a dozen times by now. I still can't believe it.
Oh, that's like when anybody will say to me, oh, hey, I listen to your podcast. I'm like, no, you fucking don't. Don't fucking lie to me.
It's like, no, you don't listen to my... Stop gassing my head up.
There's a million fucking wrestling... There might be more wrestling podcasts than there are indie wrestlers. There's no way you're listening to mine.
Oh, it's like, shit, I even tried one of those. I tried starting one of those for a couple of years ago, but it's scheduling, it just didn't really take, and yeah, things happen.
They do.
But like, yeah. Oh, jeez. I mean, there's been like a. I'm pretty sure there's been some. That's some cool stuff that I'm forgetting. But yeah, I mean, it's been a whirlwind.
I mean, it's, I'm just, it's yeah. cool in the sense that there's been so many moments you can't remember them all.
It's like, yeah, and then it's crazy. If you were right across from me, I'd shake you and tell you, this is crazy. It's all crazy.
All right, man, I use Anchor. It cuts you off after an hour. We're getting close to that. All I do is start and stop, so it's going to sound like nothing ever happened, but I just wanted to give you a heads up because I don't edit anything. I'm mid-80s Jim Crocker Promotions, straight to tape.
you're one of those motherfuckers. Okay.
Oh, yeah. All right, so. All right, and that was painless.
All right.
Here we go. All right, we've covered that one. Okay, this one. This is one I'm interested in because I love everyone's different perspective on this. What is it about independent wrestling that makes it special to you?
Well, the fact that you have so much direct access to talent. Like, for example, I once bought a shirt. It was a Bullet Club AJ Styles shirt off of AJ Styles at the HOG shirt. That I was at, and I took a picture of him right after, and that was like, I still have that shirt, and wow, I go, I can't believe I bought this shirt directly from the man. And it's stuff like that that keeps you to be a fan. Like, you can, the level of access you even have at, like, the bigger indies, like, people come out after the shows, you'd be able to take pictures of them, selfies, be able to chat with them about the matches, be able to chat with them about your favorite matches. And it's just so cool to see. Like, a lot of the bigger companies, you absolutely do not get that. Or if you do, you have to pay, I don't know, $200 just to take a distance photo with them.
Yep.
And just to say that you were in their vicinity. As opposed to the indies, where you can, you know, go to their merch table, give them a pound, give them a hug. You can buy whatever they're hawking, if it's like soap, if it's t-shirts, if it's 8x10s, if it's whatever have you, you know. And that just makes all the difference in the world, for especially if you want to build yourself and your brand. Direct access is the key.
And there's just something to me, even when indies are running larger buildings or there's just a ton of people at some indie shows, it still has that more intimate feeling.
I love that. And then also, like, some of the other shows, like, it'll be, like, guerrilla sellouts where you see, like, a lot of the talent just hanging around, just watching the shows, like, hanging in the back.
Yep.
And, like, that shit is cool to me. Like,
yes.
Like other wrestlers enjoying wrestling. That's always cool to see. It's a lot of people just, you know, especially if they get certain places, they're just like, oh, my match is already over, let me get my shit and go. As opposed to the people that's in the trenches that love every goddamn second of it.
And, I mean, just thinking about that, because we were both at GCW's Fight Club last weekend.
Mm-hmm. And yes, you were.
And even though there was so many people packed in there, it still felt like this really close thing. And seeing some of the wrestlers in a corner, just sitting around all watching it, like, it was the greatest thing. There's just something about that, I don't know, I want to say it makes me appreciate them more, that they are the people that love wrestling to love wrestling, and they're not just there like, oh, I can make some money off this and do whatever I want afterwards.
I was like, yeah, people can feel fakeness. People can also feel when you have a genuine love for something. It's you can't fake you can't fake being genuine, you know? It's other people can feel it or they don't.
Yeah, you are 100%. I feel like that's not just a wrestling thing. That's a life thing.
Exactly. And like you said, it did really feel like, you know, a friendly, you know, family atmosphere. You know, especially, you know, the shows I've shot for ICW, going to all of those shows, like a lot of those people I'm very cool with, I talk to on occasion. On occasion, I'll go to some H2O shows, like a lot of those people I talk to. A lot of those people, like one or two people have been inspired to pick up a camera. One or two people might be shooting around me at ringside one of these days.
That's awesome.
I mean, I think that's totally cool. I think talent should always be encouraged.
Yeah.
I mean, because I always feel as if work ethic is always the main differentiator. I mean, talent is talent, but if you're everywhere, if you're working all the time, and if you're getting better, and people can see that you're getting better, you know, that makes all the difference.
Again, that's a thing that I feel like is beyond wrestling. That's just, oh, well, shout out to Beyond, but just those are life things that, you know, a lot of people might just kind of overlook.
I mean, I am the child of immigrants. Like, if you have to understand, like, we are instilled, like, this level of working. Like, if you're not going to school, you better have at least two jobs. Like, I mean, I'm from the Caribbean. I mean, my parents were, you know, born in the Caribbean. I was the only Yankee that was born here in my family. That's, you know, but, wow. but yeah, I mean, but just, you just have that like level just instilled in you. And, you know, it does make a huge difference, especially when you see talent working, you see the people putting in the most effort to build their brand and you see the people that just kind of coast. It's clear as day.
Yeah.
I was like, motherfucking MV Young. Open. He has a Discord server now because they always like to shut down his Twitter account. I mean,
which is such bullshit. Like,
it is crazy. It's moves like that actually separate you more than the wrestling, because you have to become sort of like your own brand manager by yourself, technically speaking now.
Yeah.
And I think MV Young is, quite frankly, he's one of the masters of doing it. And I think more people should at least learn from that example of at least promoting yourself. Almost like a myth, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, he's very good at the way that he portrays himself in person, in social media, you know, in everything. It sucks that he's developed some people who have nothing better to do with their lives than try to make sure that he can't be on Twitter, which is just beyond me.
Oh well, that's people always going to hate.
Yeah.
I mean, Twitter is apparently one of his biggest haters, which is the craziest thing in the world. I was like, when they banned him again, like they warned him, it was like, nah, so we're going to need you to stop trying to open up new accounts because we banned you before. And that's like, they're like that. To envy, I post pictures of men and women getting beaten with 2x4s and glass panes, and I haven't even gotten so much as a warning.
Right.
So I'm also like, are they watching me? Are they gonna watch me? Are they gonna make shit real hard for me soon? You know, all these things that you gotta think about.
Yeah, and I can see that being a legitimate worry for. Especially someone of like your background in photography, because that's a big place to get your stuff out.
Exactly. Huge.
And, you know, speaking of the brand, of the Red Shoes Media brand, what are some of the plans that you have for the future?
I mean, well, my plans for the future. Well, what? My immediate plan for the future, I would really, really want to shoot in Japan, in Mexico, and possibly in UK and Europe. Well, first I have to get a passport for all these things, but that is something I really want to do for the next couple of months. I've been slacking way too long on that. I really want Red Shoes Media to be everywhere. Like, I really want that to be a goal. There's a lot of promotions I've been wanting to work with. There's just so much shit going out there in the world. I just want to shoot like a deathmatch down under. I'd love to shoot one of those shows. Ooh, I'd love to shoot those. They have a very good photographer. I my I'm actually spacing on his name, unfortunately. It's not Paul. I'm spacing on the name right now. They have a very good photographer. I'd like to work alongside with him. There's Zona 23 in Mexico. Those shows look so fucking chaotic. I'd love to shoot that.
And I feel like whenever I try to explain a Zona show to somebody, I'm like, oh, you know, it's a crazy, insane deathmatch scenario in a junkyard in Mexico. And they're like, no, now you're fucking lying to me. That can't be real.
Like, yeah, I've seen footage of it. It doesn't look like it should be legal.
Right. I mean, it probably wouldn't be if it was in the States.
I mean, it probably wouldn't be, but I'm pretty sure if he had New Jersey, no one would blink an eye.
No, that's the land of no laws. You can get away with anything.
No one gives a damn in Jersey. In terms of the future, though, definitely Zona 23. I'd also like to expand my offerings, but that's like maybe like another 2 years down the line, quite frankly, the way that I'm working. But I really want to grow things. What I definitely want to do within the next 6 months is release a book or a zine, because I think it's been far too long that I just haven't had one. I want to see some of my work in print, and I believe a lot of people would like to see something in print of mine.
Yeah, and I feel like the cool thing about, you know, photo books of that perspective is that not only can you have the book for all the cool moments that are captured there, but you can also get the wrestlers to sign them in the book.
That is 100% correct. That's 100% correct. I mean, there's so much stuff that I've shot, and there's so much stuff that, like, I just haven't even released for one reason or another. Because, I mean, I'm pretty picky about what goes out under, the logo. As everyone should be. Everyone should be very protective of what gets seen by the general public. Just because you're not going to shoot 4,000 photos and then you put out 3,000 of them, 2,000 were bullshit.
Right.
You know, that even I do have to say I am a very casual overshooter. So there's like many events that are maybe 3 or 4 hours that I have like 4,000 pictures for.
Oh my God.
It's like, yeah, it's very maddening to even go through, but I love capturing detail of matches. It's been said by a couple of different people that I don't take pictures, I capture moments. And that's something that I always try to do. If there's anything I could do differently, I always try to capture the subtleties. There's always the big spots that anyone could hit. You know when they're going to happen. Like, even if you've been a photographer of some note, or working around ringside, you have this thing, what I like to call spot vision, where basically, you know, you've seen enough wrestling, you've shot enough matches to know what's going to happen, what a wrestler's going to bring out, what the crowd sound is going to be, and exactly how much time you have to get to that specific vantage point to shoot it properly. So that might have been a trade secret I might have given up.
I mean, I'd say it's a yes and no thing, because there's also that thing where I feel like anyone who's ever wrestled before and then for some any reason has stopped, there's something about watching matches. You can pick up on certain timings and certain things, and you know where things are going to happen. So I can definitely understand how photographers would have that similar eye to it, just being around it for so long.
It's like, yeah, and like for me, I always like to get the most extreme shots that I can of like things happening, which got me in trouble one time in Indiana, which I was shooting a match. And I was positioned right behind a pane of glass that someone had set up like one of the posts, and someone's gonna, I believe it was Tank versus Satu Jin. It was like a multi-man match. But anyway, I think it's Tank. He goes through the pane of glass. I'm shooting right behind it. One of the pieces of glass jumps up and hits me right smack in the head.
Yep.
And then I start bleeding like almost instantly. It's like, I actually, like, saw the footage from the IWTV side of things, and just, like, you can actually see me check my head, it's just like, holy shit, this is blood? And then it's, it was Casey. It was Casey Cattell. She saw me, she's like, holy shit, like, you need to come with me. And she patched me up, and luckily it wasn't, like, any sort of severe sort of bleeding or anything like that. It was just like, let's put some pressure on it. It's fine. I just washed my face off and just started shooting again, and that was it.
Yeah, and sometimes it is crazy how you kind of just either are oblivious to the moment or you just want that picture that bad.
It's like, yeah, I want that goddamn shot, so I will put myself in a limited amount of harm's way to get it. I mean, but there's a lot of, like, cool shots that I thought about getting at the time, but they would either interfere with the match or possibly get me seriously hurt, neither of which I want to do.
Yeah, because, I mean, you still got to live life. You still have to be able to do other things.
I was like, yeah, I mean, I'll keep it 100%. Like, I just recently had to get a shoot job, you know, and, you know, because, you know, I still live in New York, and New York is kind of a pricey place to live, because I don't know if you've heard.
I'm upstate. I'm in an area where it is way, way cheaper to live than down there. But it's also, you know, I live in a city of 15,000 people. It's not that big of a place.
I mean, well, yeah, I mean, that's tiny. I've been upstate a few times. It's almost like a time warp to a different land and different place, depending on where you go.
I live in the foothills of the Adirondacks, so it is a night and day experience from being in this city.
Adirondacks. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a mis up here. It's like a misplaced southern state. It makes zero sense.
Oh yeah, I was like, I mean, the fact that they fly Confederate flags in a northern state is just the most ridiculous thing I could possibly ever think of.
I've never understood it.
That's another discussion, though.
But you're right, though. I went to high school with some kids who did it. I'm like, what part of this is, like, one, logical, two, makes you think this is a great fucking idea, because you're just a fucking idiot and a piece of shit for doing it.
I was like, yeah, I mean, I don't understand why anyone would fly a treasonous flag, but again, I don't know. I don't know why people do the things they do. I'm just trying to be a black man alive in it.
That's not always easy.
It ain't. It ain't. That is correct. So, I mean, to be fair, though, I mean, in my short time being quote-unquote in the wrestling business, I personally haven't received any sort of slight, which I think would have been based on anything racial.
Well, that's
good. I don't think so. At least I don't think so. But, like, I mean, here's the thing about Red Shoes Media. If you don't like Red Shoes Media, that really sucks you, because I'm still going to be fucking everywhere. I was like, believe it or not, I have had at least one photographer try to get my IG account canceled.
Wow.
He was a huge piece of shit, by the way.
I believe
huge piece of shit. And once I blocked him, all of a sudden my IG account suddenly stopped getting blocked for 24 hours at a time.
Oh.
But, like, I mean, other than that, like, I honestly, people have done nothing but nice to me.
That's good. I'm happy to hear that, because wrestling can be something.
It's like, yeah, it definitely is. We all have heard the goddamn stories.
Yes.
And sometimes those stories pop up on occasion, but my goal forever will try to be as maximally respectful as possible, and also keep my nose clean, because I'm just here to provide a service to the industry. And quite frankly, I'd like to make myself look good, you know, doing it in terms of, you know, Red Shoes Media. I'd like to make sure that, you know, if I shot something that you like, I want you to have it. I want you to spread it out throughout the world, you know. But I refuse to give anyone the opportunity to have a shot to not have me be part of this industry. not me. But of course, I am respectful to everybody. That's the way you have to be.
Yeah.
Regardless of any sort of fucking scandals that would have happened, as long as, I mean, I may be old fashioned, but as long as you're nice and do good work, you'll get pretty far.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Just try to be a good person. I don't think that's a hard thing to do.
It's really not a hard thing to do. It's really not. I was like, a lot of people really think by being assholes they get much further in life. It's not the case. It's, you know, flies are attracted to honey.
Yeah.
I believe that the saying goes.
I mean, they're trying to do a lot of things. All right, man. I know that you're not very familiar with my podcast, which is totally fine. But we are at the point of this conversation where I am done with wrestling questions. And I am now going to ask you random, ridiculous questions that have absolutely nothing to do with pro wrestling.
All right. Give me.
All right. Number one, everyone gets asked this. Mm-hmm. Grape or strawberry jelly?
I will go for grape.
I am grape jelly gang for life. Thank you for being on our side. I guess this one is slightly wrestling related. How many pairs of red shoes do you own, and do you have one that's your absolute favorite?
That is a good question. So the pair that I normally wear to shows, I actually have two pairs of those. So that's two pairs right there. I have another pair of Jordan, like 11s. So there's at least like another, I would say, four pairs besides the other two that I mentioned.
All right. That's dedication.
I like the color red. What can I tell you?
Is there any shoe brand under no circumstances that you will ever wear?
I mean, I've had Adidas before. I like the Adidas that I've worn. I mean, I'm typically a Nike/Jordan guy, if anything. I like Yeezys, too. Oh, jeez.
But will we ever find you in a pair of New Balances?
No. No, absolutely, I can't stand New Balances.
There we go. I'm on that page, too.
They're definitely like, they always look like old people orthopedic shoes. I don't understand for the life of me how they're becoming popular.
I don't get it. I don't. I just look at them and go, and I am not a shoe guy at all. I'm very open about that. I only really wear one kind of shoes. I wear Chucks. But just looking at New Balances, I'm like, no. Couldn't pay me. No fucking way.
It's like, in like Brooklyn, we have like these little discount stores. They'll have like, it'll basically, I wouldn't say it's like a box, but it'll be like a little section where they'll have like these knockoff Jordans. Not even in a box, but just like tied together to it, like into a knot, and then just placed there for like $15. And like, those what those New Balances seem and look like to me. Like, I can't get over those.
What is the worst travel experience you've ever had in your life?
Ooh, worst travel experience? This was actually fairly recently. I think it was like the Indiana show. I mean, that was actually, there's a bit of a story behind that. So a couple at the time was kind enough to pretty much invite me to get picked up from the airport and then get drone all the way into Indiana. So basically I flew into Chicago and like I was picked up in Chicago and then driven into Indiana for the show. In the meantime, though, this couple was in the process of breaking up. So there is like a lot of times where just, you know, there was tension. There was a lot of tension. And as a photographer that likes his comfort and peace, you know, I felt kind of uncomfortable, I mean, given the situation. And so pretty much everybody, pretty much we all kind of wake up late and everyone's upset because, you know, we got to get to the venue and it's one thing happened and another thing happened, and then it's like about a 3-hour drive to the venue, and then there's arguments galore about this happening and that happening, and in the meantime, I'm just in the back seat with a Red Bull, just hoping this doesn't blow up and someone just decide to tuck and roll on the highway. And so, but once we arrived at the venue, everything was good. I got some fantastic pictures of everyone that was there. And yeah, that's only the first part of the story. That's only the first part of the story. So, also, they had, by the time we had gotten to the venue, they had broken up. So now, which had created another sort of massive wrinkle in the whole thing, because I had booked my flight to get to Chicago. I'm in Indiana. And how am I going to ask this, person to drive me all the way back to Chicago when they seem kind of high-key pissed off?
Yeah.
And so, and what also didn't help matters is that the geniuses at American Airlines decided to cancel my flight at least 3 times in 1 day.
Oh, wow.
And so, but luckily, the flight coming back home to New York, there was a connection. The original flight was from Chicago to Indianapolis, and then from Indianapolis to New York. But luckily, I was in Indianapolis, and I called American Airlines. And apparently, American Airlines is weird because I called them, and then they said they had, like, a 6-hour wait. So I was not going to wait on the goddamn phone for 6 hours for no American Airlines, and I just decided to, you know what, just call me back. Call me back. And so they called, and it's like, hey, so I just need you to cancel the first leg of this flight so I can just go from Indianapolis to over here. Okay, we can do that for you. All right. So that flight gets canceled.
Oh, crap.
That flight gets canceled. But then I look on the app, and then American Airlines gives the option. So, hey, so we canceled your flight. Here is the options we can provide for you. The options was a flight from Indianapolis to Arizona, to Phoenix, Arizona. And then from Phoenix, Arizona, going all the way back to Newark Airport. And I was fucking pissed off just sitting there. Because I had to fly, so I basically flew from like near. I was much closer to New York in Indianapolis.
Oh yeah.
Then flying all the way back to Phoenix, Arizona, and then from Phoenix, Arizona, all the way back to Jersey.
This is the most ridiculous detour I've ever heard in my life.
Oh my God! I don't ever want to fly American ever again. If you ever see me fly American, it'll be under a massive duress. But that much I can promise you.
Oh.
Like, that is a hell of a travel story. Luckily, I didn't even lose any luggage. So, had I lost luggage, I might still be in jail by now.
What is the biggest misconception about Brooklyn that you can think of?
That the biggest misconception about Brooklyn right now is that it's all gentrified. You can never fully gentrify Brooklyn. Never, not in a million years. There's so many parts of Brooklyn that, even to a lot of people in Brooklyn that, you know, people don't know about. There's these beautiful, beautiful mansions somewhere like smack in the middle of Brooklyn. I mean, if I had taken you there, you would never believe that you were in New York City, let alone Brooklyn, New York.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, I mean, like, I live in East New York, Brooklyn, which is more or less considered the hood, but nowhere near as bad as it once was. And I'm not too far away from an area called Brownsville, which is, quite frankly, always been shitty.
I've heard of Brownsville.
Like, a fun fact, the Joker was actually originally supposed to take place in Brownsville until the director decided to change it to the Bronx. That's how bad Brownsville is. That was like, it was originally, the Joker's originally going to take place in Brownsville in the 80s. And if you know about Brownsville in the 80s, holy shit. It's So that's just to tell you how bad it is. And then, of course, you have, like, stuff, you know, Williamsburg. And then you have, like, you know, Howard Beach is actually in Queens. But then it's just, like, you know, old. There's so many beaches in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
You know, I mean. I mean, there's so much you could do in Brooklyn without even stepping foot within Manhattan and Queens or wherever. And Brooklyn definitely has its beautiful parts. It definitely has its really shitty parts as well, but, you know, it kind of is just like everywhere else. I've never heard of anywhere that was entirely perfect.
You need the shitty places to make the okay places look better.
I mean, that is true. That is historically true.
All right, and the last one, the standard bearer of this show. What is the creepiest basement you've ever been in, and why?
Ooh, the creepiest basement. Shit. I mean, funny to say, like, I haven't been like in a ton of creepy basements.
That's a good thing. When anybody ever says that, I go, you know what? That's probably a good thing. I'm just apparently I've been one of those people my whole life. Like, oh, this place is nice. I wonder what the basement looks like.
I actually don't really like that I'm saying that right now, because I've always been like an actual explorer. Like I've been dying to find someone to explore like abandoned places with, but you know, it's people don't like to do that in Brooklyn, so
I can see why maybe in Brooklyn.
I was like, there's like abandoned hospitals like across the city. There's like,
oh, that'd probably be so cool to check out though.
Like, yeah, there's like old children's hospitals and tuberculosis wings and shit.
Oh yeah.
But like I can never find anyone that wants to go, or at least has like the know-how to get in these places without getting arrested.
That's the important part, is the not getting caught.
Oh well, that's majorly important. let me think about creepy. Like, I really haven't been like any sort of like creepy basement where I had to like, you know, tuck my pants into my shoes or anything like that.
Well, like I said, that is good, because I've seen some weird ones, mine specifically.
I was just like, you don't go down there to check bumps in the night in your basement?
No. The initial reason why I started down here was because it is the quietest room in the house.
I mean, well, that's... Oh, every man needs peace and quiet.
All right, man. That's pretty much all I got. Do you want to throw out where everybody can follow you on social media? Maybe throw out the shirt link again?
Absolutely. You can find me on the Twitter at Red Shoes Media, all one word. You also find me on Instagram at red.shoes.media. You can also visit my website if you'd like to see more of my pictures at redshoes.media. Now, there is no .com. It is, again, redshoes.media.
Well, that's fancy.
Oh, yes, it is. I pay good money for that domain. And if you want to buy my shirts, which would support me greatly, there's my LJN-inspired Red Shoes Media shirt.
I love that one. I need to go buy that one when I get some.
That is one of my more popular shirts. And also my Akira shirt, which I really love. I designed that one personally myself. One of my favorite shirts. And... what else can I promote? I'm also on Instagram. I believe it's facebook.com/redshoesmedia316 if you want a direct link. But quite frankly, you should probably go to my Twitter and my Instagram. I do often post different things on my Twitter than I do my Instagram. So I recommend that you follow both for the full Red Shoes Media experience.
Well, that's a good way to get people to follow both.
Exactly. And quite frankly, I could use some more Twitter followers, so if you could send people on my way to follow Red Shoes Media and see all the work that I do as soon as it happens, I'd recommend that you do that.
Yeah, I'm with you. Anybody who listens and has Twitter, go follow Red Shoes Media. You're not gonna be upset that you did that.
I was like, yeah, my Twitter needs love, so Philly's provided with that love.
All right, man. Well, I definitely appreciate, you know, you taking the time tonight. I had a great conversation, great time. I hope you did too.
I had a blast. This is a very fun experience. You know, it's kind of weird just like talking about yourself, especially when you don't feel like it's not. I'm Barbara Walters was it? I'm not important enough to know Barbara Walters interview. You might actually be the Barbara Walters of the Indies. And maybe nobody knows that yet.
Oh, man, there could be a chance.
I was like, yeah, but, you know, just stay away from Sean Connery. He isn't like her. But in any case.
I think he's gone now.
Oh, yes, he is. Yes. You're 100% correct, Rob.
So I don't have to worry about any awkward conversations about slapping women or... maybe anything that might be anti-Semitic.
He looked that woman in the eye and he says, like, you know, sometimes a woman needs to be slapped. It's like, I don't have that kind of... Oh, that's a lot.
I could not imagine just looking someone in the eyes and saying something like that and be like, yeah, I'm right. You might not want to agree with me, but I'm fucking right.
Dead serious.
Yeah.
He was breaking down his reasoning. It was like, oh, geez, he's really going pretty far with this. Oh,
that's like when they people discovered that old John Wayne interview at Playboy from the 70s where he's just being incredibly racist, and they're just like, how did I not know? I'm like, really? How did you not know?
Uh-oh, fuck that draft-dodging piece of shit.
Oh, thank you. I remember, and I love this story, and I don't know why I'm telling you, but this just reminds me of it. My dad was like, you know, was a John Wayne kind of guy. You know, he liked the movies. And I said to him, what the fuck, Dad? He was a draft dodger. And he's like, what? And he was like, yeah. And my dad dropped out of high school when he was 17 because he knew he was going to be drafted. And he decided to enlist because he thought it would get him better training to be sent to Vietnam. So he had a chance of coming back instead of just getting, you know, blown up and come back that way.
I was like, yep, and John Wayne's like, well, Pilgrim, I got these movies I gotta make.
So my dad was like, no way. So I think I was with him at his job at the time. Like, let's go to the computer, and I look it up, and I show it to him, and he's like, you know what? Fuck John Wayne.
You know what? Motherfucking Jimmy Stewart, served in the Army. Jimmy fucking Stewart. He has several medals of honor. Jimmy fucking Stewart before fucking John Wayne. Served in the military, especially at the time of need. But I actually get kind of upset talking about this.
And yeah, and you mentioned that was a point where, you know, those wars were meaningful.
Like, yeah, those were some serious wars. There was dudes out there trying to kill a whole race of people. Whole races of people. Yeah, trying to kill it once.
Multiple races. And he was just like, no, man, I got to make the longest day.
It's like, yeah. I was like, no, I got him. You know what, Pilgrim? I gotta make this movie, The Barbarian and the Geisha.
I can't believe someone
heard of that movie, by the way.
Where they cast him as Genghis Khan?
Yes.
Who fucking thought, guys? Great fucking idea. I'm gonna make this movie where John Wayne is Genghis Khan. If they were not drunk or fucked up when they suggested this, then I don't know who could have done it with a straight face.
I mean, it was Hollywood in the 50s. I mean, I was like, most Asian men were played by whites. So, you gotta be mindful of, that shit.
My Nana always thought Charlton Heston did a wonderful performance as a Jewish man.
Ben Hur. And that's actually one of my all-time favorite movies.
She liked him more in Ten Commandments. She didn't care for Ben-Hur because there was Jesus involved. And as a elderly Jewish woman, she had nothing to do with Jesus.
I was like, well, I mean, my mom was raised Catholic, and she'd always like to have us watch Ten Commandments whenever it came on TV. But there's a lot of wild shit in that movie.
There is. I can't believe they would, like, make me sit and watch it with them when I'm, like, 9 or 10. I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
I also have the Ten Commandments because the Ten Commandments is—it's just such a Hollywood-ass movie about religion. And it's just like, and so anachronistic to me. Oh man, I definitely used that word wrong. And anachronistic. I definitely fucked up that word. I was like, but like Charlton Heston was the man for a little bit, and then something about guns and cold dead hands. And, I don't know.
Yes. All right, RJ. Again, thank you so much for taking some time with me and having some laughs and having a good time. I hope I run into you at a show soon. I can't wait to see you again.
It's like, yeah, man, this was a blast. I can't wait to run into you, and then we'll just laugh about this all together.
All right, sounds like a plan, man.
All right, man. Again, it was a pleasure talking to you. I hope anyone that's interested in photography feels inspired by what I do. And it's super dope that it's people out there that have felt that need to just pick up a camera and take pictures of, you know, these awesome men and women that's given up their lives to provide all of us for entertainment, you know?
Yeah, but now you have these commercials of iPhones showing that they can make Hollywood movies, so you're just going to have people with phones next to you instead of cameras.
Man, it's happened once. but that was just an issue of just like people. There's a saying just generally in photography, the best camera you have is the one you have on you. Well, sometimes you got to hustle up there.
Okay, yeah, I get that. Like if you're in a bind or something, but. I don't know,
But absolutely do not show up to shows ringside with a cell phone camera. Don't do that shit.
Yeah, no.
Please don't.
And I hate that it's kind of being presented as, your phone camera's just as good as any camera. It's like, no. No, it's not.
I mean, in short, there's many, many reasons why that isn't true. And most of it has to do with sensor size and glass, but that's really all too complicated to get over in a wrestling podcast. But yeah, if you're going to be shooting, please shoot with like a DSLR or any like respectable photo device that you can definitely get good material out of.
All right, I will be next to you with an old school Polaroid.
Man, like everybody does that. Everyone's got some Polaroids. Everyone shoots on some 35mm. You know, I'm digital. I live the digital revolution. One of these days, I might pull out a camera that I have a 35mm camera that I own, and I might bust it out one of these days. But what I really might do, I have a Super 8 camera.
Oh, wow.
I might bust that out of the show. I have the camera. I just have to get the batteries and the chargers and tapes. Once I do that, we'll get some real 1994-looking footage.
Oh, what a year that was.
Yes.
Brings me back. All right, sir. I'll let you go so you can get ready for work tomorrow.
Thank you so much for that. It was wonderful talking to you. I can't wait to hear this afterwards.
I will probably save it for tomorrow because I don't think anyone is going to be up at 11 p.m. to listen to it.
that's a fair criticism.
All right, man. Take it easy. I'm sure I'll talk to you soon. Once I get some spare cash, I'll be buying shirts. And
I would appreciate that, man.
And everyone listening should do the same.
I agree with the host.
All right, man. Take it easy.
All right, man. You too.
All right, everybody. That was RJ Adams of Red Shoes Media. He told you everywhere where to follow him. Please do so. Great guy. Great love for wrestling, for everything. And that was a really fun one. I'm glad that was my first one back in a little bit, because I definitely needed a fun conversation like that. For my social medias, let me try and remember. It's been a while since I had to hype anything. Facebook, just search Alone in the Basement. Instagram also is Alone in the Basement. I haven't posted anything there in forever. Twitter's AITB Podcast. I haven't posted anything on Twitter in forever either. I need to step my game up. But the plan now is to be back on a more regular basis. I'd like to do that. I miss the experience of being able to talk to different people in wrestling from all different standpoints, whether it's photographers like this, referees, wrestlers, owners. It's just, I don't know, man. To me, everybody has their place in wrestling, whether they're in front of a camera, behind a camera, being the one holding the camera. It's just everybody has their place where they make the whole thing become a big product and become whole. And I love talking to everybody who's involved in it. So I love all you guys. I hope that people who maybe haven't heard the podcast in a while are excited to see it back. And maybe some new people will check it out. That'd be pretty sweet too. So I will, I'll talk to you guys next week. I love all of you. Stay safe, stay healthy, and I'll catch you later. Bye.